The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to book acquisitions editor, publicist, and now writer, Lissa Warren. She just published a feline memoir called The Good Luck Cat, How a Cat Saved a Family and a Family Saved a Cat. Stick around. If this story doesn't open your cold, hard, dogs-only heart, I don't know what will.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you preferred to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching.
Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of Jackson Galaxy fans who carry a guitar case full of catnip everywhere they go in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I don't know if I'd rather be one of Lissa Warren's cats or one of the authors she shepherds around when their books are published. Either way, you can count on receiving some extraordinary care and handling, and probably feeding, too. Now, I've known Lissa for several years in her role as a book publicist for Boston-based DeCapo Press. She's connected me with some of Mr. Media's most popular interviews, including former TV Hercules Kevin Sorbo, singer and former Righteous Brother Bill Medley, and, most recently, Anthrax co-founder Scott Ian. She is always a pro, and always a pleasure. Now, like a lot of people that we deal with daily in our singular roles, it's often a surprise to learn they have lives outside of the way that we know them. For example, I had no idea that Lissa was such a complete homebody, or that she has an MFA in creative writing with a lean toward poetry, or that she is a cat person. I learned that she had written The Good Luck Cat, How a Cat Saved a Family and a Family Saved a Cat, by sheer accident. We became Facebook friends recently after years of strictly professional interaction, and I suddenly saw these references to an upcoming book of hers. "Why didn't you tell me?" I asked. Now, this must be the first time that a book publicist didn't want to impose on someone in the media for publicity, and for herself even. But Lissa Warren has written a warm, touching, family-friendly memoir of the life she and her parents built around a most unusual cat, a Korat, named Ting Pei Warren. There are moments of great humor and great sadness captured forever in these pages. My number one takeaway? I wish I had gotten to know her dad, Jerry Warren. He seems like a fascinating fella, and I just really enjoyed her take on him. Oh, and the other thing? Lissa is a peach. Lissa Warren, welcome, finally as a guest, to Mr. Media.
Thank you, my friend. It's nice to join you. It's nice to hear that you feel like you got to know my dad from this book. You would have liked him, and he would have liked you.
There you go. Well, we'll one day maybe that'll happen. Who knows? Depending on where your beliefs fall. First of all, before we go any further, happy National Cat Day.
Thank you. Happy National Cat Day to you as well.
Thank you. And for people who see this, And it is not National Cat Day. We recorded it on National Cat Day, of course.
But in my world, it's always National Cat Day.
I believe that. Now I really believe that, having read the book. I really do believe that. What does something like National Cat Day mean to a cat lady like yourself?
It's just a chance to sit back and be grateful for everything you have if you have a cat in your life. They really do make life much more worth living and fill your life with so much more fun and so much more love and so much more comfort. So I think of that on.
And did you do anything special for National Cat Day?
We didn't do anything special for National Cat Day, but we did do something special on Monday of this week because it was my cat Ting Pei's 19th birthday. So she got tuna fish instead of usual food that night and lots of extra scratches and pats.
So 19, how old is that in dog years?
I don't know how old that is in dog years, but I found a fancy cat calculator that suggests she's about 95 years old now. She is an old girl, but she's still doing really well.
She's I wanted to ask you about that because in the book you talk about her having some health issues at some point, but she's good.
She's good now. She has a human pacemaker. She was diagnosed with a condition called second-degree AV block. And we were told by our cat cardiologist, yes, they really are good people, that she needed a pacemaker if she wanted to survive. But they don't make them for cats. They don't make them for dogs either. So what they did is they found a human pacemaker and implanted that in her. So it's been 5 or 6 years since she had that incredible surgery, and she has not had a fainting spell since. And the pacemaker is still ticking away just like it needs to.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
now, let's talk about the breed of this cat, the Korat. Why? What attracted you to the breed? And what, you know? Okay, now I'm a dog person. People who've seen the show before, when I've talked to people about cats, they know I'm strictly a dog guy. So I apologize in advance for my ignorance of cats, their breeds, and why anyone would prefer a cat over a dog. So let's just.
I think dog and cat people are the same people. I truly do. I bet we have a lot more in common than we do differences. Just anybody who loves an animal is aces with me.
Well, so. I believe that you and I probably have a lot of things in common that way, but I don't think most cat and dog people who are really strong cat or strong dog, I wouldn't, you know, I mean, I think, you know, it would be like putting Michael Vick in the, never mind.
So tell me
about Ting's breed.
She is a Korat. They're from Thailand. That's the same country as, you know, a Burmese would be from, of course, and that's just the Burma region. And for the Korat, it's the Korat region of Thailand. They are a silver gray in color. If you were to see a picture of one or see Ting, my cat, you'd see instantly why we fell in love with the breed. They are just gorgeous. But in addition to a beautiful appearance, they have beautiful temperaments. They are very loyal cats. They're inquisitive and smart. They're fun cats. She was a little devil when she was young. But they do mellow a lot in old age. And they're just very sweet, gentle, refined, dignified animals. It's a great breed.
Do they speak English?
No, they don't speak a lot of English, although there are a few words that she has learned to understand. When we say birdie, if you say it just in the right way and kind of look at the window, she will look at the window. Her head will snap, and she will know that that means there's a bird out there. Another phrase that she has learned is baby food, because she has a little bit of kidney failure, as most cats her age would. And we were told by our vet, not our cat cardiologist, our regular vet, that she should be getting more, you know, wet food in her diet. But she doesn't like wet cat food. The only wet food that we could get her to eat was human baby food, Gerber turkey and gravy. Don't laugh at me, Bob Andelman. Turkey and gravy is her favorite. So we feed that to her, and the way that we find out if she's hungry or not is we say baby food, and if she wants it, she'll talk back to us, and if she doesn't, she'll simply walk away.
So is she a talker in general or just for certain things?
She's pretty talkative, and she's gotten more vociferous in her old age, for certain. She was a pretty quiet kitten, a destructive little kitten. She liked to shred anything she could get her little scissor paws on, but she was pretty quiet. She's more talkative now that she's older, though.
It's interesting. You know, dogs don't get to be, 13 is a pretty old dog. So, you know, whatever your dog speaks at that point. Although my wife got my dog to talk the other day. It was very late. We've gotten into this routine where my wife now works till midnight. So we'll come home and we'll sit on the couch and watch some TV. And I'll get out these little pretzel sticks. And she got the dog to start yammering at me. And I was just very surprised because this dog doesn't talk. I've had dogs who will, you know, they'll howl with me and do that kind of thing. So yeah, it's interesting about the cat. Now, how is a Korat any different? This is a dog lover, okay, asking this question. It's not meant to insult the breed. But how is a Korat any different in behavior or temperance or you know, temperament than kind of an average house cat?
You know, I don't know that it is different. I mean, I think every cat, regardless of breed, has its own temperament and personality. I know some wonderful cats who are not Karats. I know some wonderful cats who are not even purebreds. You know, they're mixed. They're mutt cats. They're shelter cats. And they are also very loyal and very smart. I think that the difference is that when you buy a purebred cat, you're almost assured that your cat will be super healthy, usually very smart. It's not a toss-up as much when it's a cat that isn't a purebred. But there are so many fantastic cats out there that aren't purebred. And I encourage anyone who wants a cat, not just to think of a breeder as a source for your new family member, but to go to a local shelter and see who they have, not what they have, but who they have, the personalities that are there waiting to come home.
Well, speaking of breeding, this is a strange segue, but speaking of breeding, tell me about your dad. I want to set the table a little bit before we talk more about the book. I mentioned that I just thought he sounded fascinating. He's not your everyday kind of guy. He seemed to have some very unique things about him.
Yeah, he was an incredible man. He grew up in the Bronx, and he went to college, to the University of Michigan, at the age of 16. He was really bright, really young. He graduated from University of Michigan and joined the Navy and was a naval officer for a number of years. And then he went into retail and worked in department stores as one of the higher ups in those stores. And it's not a job that I think he loved per se, but he was such a happy person that it almost in a way didn't matter what he did for a living because, you know, he came home to my mom and he came home to me and we were his world and we were his life. And that was enough for him. He liked crossword puzzles. He could do the Sunday New York Times crossword puzzle in like an hour without missing a letter. He loved baseball. He liked football too, but baseball especially the Yankees. And he loved animals. He made sure that from, you know, the time I was really, really little that I always had an animal in my life. My first pet was a dog, actually. It was a Karen Terrier. Her name was Oregano. And then when I was 5, my Christmas present was a Burmese cat named Cinnamon, who I had with me until she died at the age of 19. And then we decided that we needed a companion for my dad because he'd had some heart trouble and needed to have, you know, he spent a lot of time at home and needed a kind of quiet companion who could just be there beside him and keep him company when my mom was at work and I was at work. So that was why we adopted Ting. We thought that they would be a perfect match, and they turned out to be inseparable.
Hmm. Well, two more things about your dad. One is that he grew up a New York Giants football fan, but he actually gave them up for the Patriots, as I recall, right?
Yep, but he stayed true to his Yankees. He never was a Red Sox fan. He would have wanted me to point that out.
All right, you're covered, Jerry. And then the other thing that I found interesting, he went to DeWitt Clinton High School, which was all boys for a long time, probably when he was there. Do you know who else went to DeWitt Clinton?
There was an actor from the TV show Taxi who went there.
Judd Hirsch, probably.
Yes, that's who it was. Wow, very good.
They actually, I could pull out a book and give you a list, but I actually did the biography of an old comic book artist named Will Eisner, and he went there.
Oh, you're kidding me. I didn't know that. I know his work. Wow.
Stan Lee went there.
Didn't know that either.
I believe that the couple or the guy who was part of the writing duo that wrote Singing in the Rain went there. It's a pretty phenomenal group of graduates that they had there over the years. So I had a feeling you might not know that, so I wanted to share that with you.
I didn't know that, and I don't think he knew that. I really don't. That's neat.
So anyway, I wanted to just share that with you while I was thinking of it. I made a note in the book, DeWitt Clinton High School. So now I don't do this very often because it's kind of hackneyed, but I thought it would help people understand your book a little bit if maybe you could read a little passage from it. Are you still okay with doing that?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. Let me grab my book for you. Hold on.
All right.
Okay, I got it right here.
All right. And folks, I actually indicated a passage to Lissa that I really liked. So this is from, what, about page 72, I think.
Starting on 70 and going to 72, if I recall correctly.
All right, I'll shut up and listen to you read.
Here we go. It was a sunny Monday in spring when Ting Pei alerted Mom and Dad to a commotion in the fireplace. Thinking that a bird must have come down the chimney, Mom told Dad to open the window while she went and got an old bedsheet. Back downstairs, she held one end of the sheet up to the fireplace, and Dad held the other. He reached down and unlatched the glass doors. "Ready?" he asked her. "Ready," she said. And with that, he flung them open. They were expecting the bird to fly into the sheet so they could trap it and carry it out to the window, where they figured it would know what to do. The bird, however, had other ideas. From behind the sheet came a hissing noise, a cloud of ash, and a whole lot of thwacking. Mom was so startled that she dropped her corner, screaming, "That's no bird!" Technically, she was wrong. It wasn't a warbler, or a blue jay, or a thrush, a tufted titmouse, or a yellow-shafted flicker. It wasn't a catbird or a mockingbird, which we used to confuse until Dad pointed out that the catbird was gray, like Ting. It wasn't any of the small, pretty birds that reside on our property and that my parents were expecting. It wasn't even a pigeon or a mourning dove or a crow. It was certainly avian, but at that moment, it was mainly a giant black object flying at Mom's face. "Duck!" Mom screamed. That's what Dad did, crouching beneath the mantle. "No, you idiot, it's a duck!" And so it was, a female wood duck, wild-eyed and covered in soot, right down to the tips of her iridescent wings. She must have been trying to build a nest on our chimney when she fell down into it, kerplunk. The story would have ended there if Dad had opened the window like Mom's dad. But he had thought better of it while she was upstairs, afraid that Ting might fall out. He had reasoned that the bird, once ensconced in the sheet, would be easy enough to take out the front door. But that was back when it was a wren or a chat, not a 2-pound wood duck with a 3-foot wingspan. The terrified duck flew around the room, brushing against everything as she went. We had just had the whole place painted, of course. Benjamin Moore, mystic beige. Now the room looked like a Pollock painting, thick black brush strokes on every wall. The duck finally landed on the bay window ledge. Mom snatched the sheet from Dad, threw it over the duck, cranked open the window, and pushed the duck toward it. And where was Ting during all of this? Under the kitchen table, of course, about as helpful as my father, who rose up from his crouch just in time to see Mom scoot the duck off the ledge.
I love that. Well done.
That's the kind of life we lived. You know, you said homebody earlier. You're right. I mean, most of the world revolves around the walls of our home, truly.
I noticed that. I was a little surprised. I figured you for a big city girl, you know.
More worldly in my work life, but in my personal life, I'd like to just go home and hunker down.
I see that. Now, that was great. Thank you very much for reading that. I really enjoyed that. I thought if I could share something out of this book through the show, it's got to be that section. I just really thought that was so... I don't know. It captured it captured your mom, your dad, and Ting.
It captures our family. It really does.
So the first half of the book is really kind of a love story, if you will, between your dad, Jerry, and Ting. But when did you realize that you had something special there that you could put into a book? I mean, it's like a lot of these things. I mean, I love telling stories about my dog, Chase, my little terrier, who is addicted to hibiscus flowers, and his big thing is he'll go outside to the hibiscus bush, and it's Florida, so we tend to have year-round growth, and he'll look up at it, and it used to be when he was a little younger, he would get up on his hind legs and paw at it to get the branch down so he could tear it off, and now he just kind of looks at me, and he looks at the branch, and he looks at me, and he looks at the branch. So, I mean, you know, there's stories that we would tell. I wouldn't write a book about Chase. So what's the difference? How do you realize that Ting is book worthy?
You know, I think I first realized it when she had the heart trouble and we had to have the pacemaker surgery. My mom had to stay at home with her, you know, 24/7 for weeks leading up to that surgery so that we could record one of the heart episodes, one of her fainting spells, and that would be the only way that they would know how to pace her properly to get one of those recorded. So, you know, my mom worked so hard to get that recording so that we could do the surgery. And then after the surgery, when she first came home, she struggled so much. She didn't eat for over a week. We ended up having to force feed her. Even though she made it safely through the surgery, there was a time afterward where we thought we might lose her just because it was such a tough recovery for her. And when I saw the devotion that my mom had toward her, it reminded me very much of the devotion that my mom had toward my dad in his last months when he was really ill. And I just thought, God, that cat symbolizes our family. And that cat, I think, has come to symbolize every family where there's just an abundance of love and care. And that made me want to write about it because I thought it was just my story for a while and my family's story. But then I realized that it was more than that. It was the story of any family that will do whatever it takes for each other.
And before, just to put it in context, before Ting gets sick, you actually lost your dad.
Yeah, he had a massive heart attack. We were right there with him when it happened. And, you know, it isn't something you ever recover from. The thing about grief is that no one tells you it's permanent. You know, you never are able to pick up the pieces. You learn to step over them sometimes and just continue with life. But obviously, it's just never the same when you lose. You know, I lost a third of my family in one night. I mean, it was really just me, mom, and dad, and Ting, of course, but a third of my human family I lost in one night. And that changes a person. But, you know, it everyone goes through it. I'm certainly, you know, not the first person who's lost a parent. And, you know, sadly, it's a universal thing. And so I wanted to write about it.
Well, and you captured, too, after your dad passes. Now, one of the things in the book you talk about is how when he was well, your dad would put Ting like in his shirt or his sweater and Ting's head would be popping out. And you would think that would annoy the cat, but the cat loved that.
She adored it. He smelled really good. He used to And I think the nicest thing, like one of my favorite childhood memories would be picking her up and she'd smell a little bit like my dad's Aramis and a little bit like my mom's face cream. And It's just kind of beautiful, you know, kind of perfect.
Aramis and face cream. You know, there might be something there. You might want to look up the manufacturer.
Together, I could do really well probably with that.
You could sell face cream to men if you could, you know, make it smell like Aramis.
A lot of them need it.
Yeah.
Not you.
No. That's why I have the beard. It covers up a lot of stuff. Now, I don't want to give away too much about the book. You have your own health issues that are dealt with in the book, and I don't know, you know, I mean, do you want to touch on that?
I'm comfortable talking about it. It's part of who I am now. About a year ago, I woke up one morning and my left leg was numb, and I have always been a super healthy person, was so healthy I didn't even have a primary care physician, didn't need one. I was that girl at the office who, when everybody else got the flu, I was like, what's wrong with you people? It's not the time. But my left leg went numb, and I thought, well, you know, that's weird, but I'll give it a day. And the next day, my left arm went numb. And I thought, God, did I pinch a nerve? You know, what's going on here? That's weird. But I still didn't do anything about it. And the next day, my face, the lower right side of my face, was numb. And the day after that, my tongue went numb. And I thought, okay, this is really clearly not right. Something's wrong here. So I walked into a walk-in clinic, and they turfed me to an emergency room, and they turfed me to a neurologist. Long story short, within 24 hours, I had a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. Not something I was expecting, but also not something that totally shocked me when the neurologist told me, because I had actually been the publicist for a book about a woman with MS. And I was kind of familiar with the disease and its symptoms that way. And I had kind of figured out, even before he told me, that was probably the diagnosis that I was looking at. So I wasn't shocked by it. And life goes on. You know, you learn to acclimate and accommodate and live with it.
Well, it was interesting. This is one of the things I think that you and I have oddly in common, not the MS, but that we spend our lives with authors. And so, you know, we read their books. You read the books so you can, you know, promote them to people and talk to them about their books. I do, you know, for the same kind of reason. And it was interesting in the course of the book that several of your authors over time pop up in the book because, you know, if you're talking about, you know, medical, you're like, well, I remember this one author who talked about this. And you know, there's a part of me that could be kind of like, okay, come on, Lissa, you're just kind of slipping in these author mentions. But
no, I mean, they become part of your lives. Their works become part of your life. You know, I think of Stephen Wise, who wrote this book called Rattling the Cage. It's about legal rights for animals. And looking at Ting and the health care she got, you know, I think health care should be a fundamental human right, but I also think it should be a fundamental animal right. Mm-hmm. So I was influenced by that. I was influenced by Dr. Steve Ilardi's book, The Depression Cure, because before he died, my dad suffered from depression and really struggled with it. And some of the best advice I've ever heard for treating that is in a book that I was lucky enough to get to publicize. So you're right. I mean, those things do spill into the pages, but they spill into the pages not to plug them, but because they became a part of my life, those books and those authors became a part of my life, and what they had to share with people became a part of my life.
Hmm. Yeah, it was really interesting that way. And that's why I mentioned at the top of it, I don't know whether I'd rather be one of your cats or one of your authors, because you know, they both seem to get very good treatment and they live on.
They do. They do.
Now, becoming – now, I know you wrote a book about writing, actually, before this, I think, right? But this is something very different, so I'm kind of treating this a little differently. This is something where you're revealing something about yourself, which some people find very difficult, especially somebody who, like yourself, it really is a homebody who, you know were you nervous about writing this about yourself and knowing what a new author – relatively new author goes through to try to get attention for a book and promote it? Did that kind of make you go, maybe?
You know, I wasn't nervous while I was writing it. While I was writing it, I just, you know, did what all authors do. I just kept checking the damn word count. And I'm almost there yet. I'm exhausted. I didn't worry about it then, but then once I turned the manuscript in and went through the editorial process and was sort of done with that portion of my work and started to focus more on promotion, there were a few days where I thought, God, I feel really vulnerable. I still feel it a little bit, but I think it's, you know, it's because it's a memoir. It is because it's such a personal story. If I had written a book of history, or, you know, self-help or some other type of nonfiction book, I don't think I would feel it in quite the same way that I do feel it because it's a memoir. But that said, you know, after a few days of thinking about it, I got over it. And I thought, you know, this is my life and people can think what they want of it, but I love my life. I feel so lucky. I feel so fortunate. You know, Ting is the good luck cat, but in many ways, even after losing my dad, even with the MS diagnosis, even with all the tough stuff that my family's been through in the past year or two, you know, I still feel really lucky and I like my life. And if other people want to examine it and they don't like it, then I'm sorry they wasted the money on the book. Maybe they have a friend they can re-gift it to. You know, but it is what it is and I am what I am. And I'm 42 now and, you know, I know who I am and I don't feel I need to pretend to be someone I'm not.
Did you, is there anything now that the book has come out that you wish that you hadn't put in the book personally?
No, I think I yanked a few choice tidbits right before I turned it into my editor. Not things that I would have been embarrassed for people to know, but just things that would have taken attention away from the main story of the book, the main focus of it. I don't think there's anything in there that I regret. And I haven't had anybody take issue with anything so far, except at one point I do talk about in the book the people I've lost and how I mourn them. And I talk about how I know that Ting, you know, who's 19 now, that we won't always have her. And that when we lose her, I will mourn her the same way that I've mourned all the other people I've lost. And I did have one reviewer say, you know, like, what do you mean she's not a people? She's not a person. Technically, no, but, you know, she is part of my family and she does have a little personality and she has her likes and her dislikes. And she is kind of a people to me. And I will miss her horribly and mourn her terribly when I lose her someday, just like I mourned my grandmother and my grandfather who I adored, and just like I mourn my father every day.
Now, one of the things that happens to an author is you get a lot of questions from the press, obviously. putting up with this interview right now. But also, when you go, you were at the Harvard Co-op this past week doing a signing and talking about your book. You're meeting a lot of people in the public that, you know, when you're taking them out, when you're taking out other authors, that no one's asking you questions about yourself.
Like I'm invisible when I'm with them, which is good with me.
But now, okay, so, you know, you've written this book. Now, I'm going to raise the question. You do not have to answer this. Don't feel any pressure. But, I've known you for a couple of years, and since we've been doing the video interviews, I've actually been able to see you. So now I know that you're this young, very attractive young woman. So the thing that I didn't get from the book, and you don't have to answer this, I don't get any sense of a social life for you outside of your dog and your parents. Please tell me that you have a life.
I have a wonderful boyfriend who I've been with for 15 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. A long time. We're married, just not on paper. And if you look at the very end of the book, you know, it says that I dedicate the book to him regardless of the paperwork. And that paperwork to me would be a marriage license. But it's not about the paperwork for us. You know, he hung in there with me when I lost my dad and, you know, then struggled to get my footing again after that. He didn't run for the hills when I was diagnosed with MS. He was like, honey, you know, I'm right there. This doesn't change anything. If anything, I just will love you more and take care of you more, which is exactly what I needed to hear, you know. And so I do have a social life. Okay. I do have a life outside of work. But at the same rate, it's a quiet life. Like a really good Friday night for me and for him is go home, maybe have a pizza delivered, like watch some old Law and Orders on TV. And he has two cats, which I love about him. And so we hang out with his cats. You know, that's a great Friday night to me and also to him. So we're well matched in that way. So, see, don't you feel better now knowing that I have somebody who cares about me?
I do. I feel a lot better, actually. But he's nowhere in the book.
No, because I really thought, you know, when I published this book, I could become the crazy cat lady. And he's cool. Like, he's a really cool guy. And I didn't want him to be burdened with the, oh my God, you're dating that crazy cat lady? You've been with her for how many years? So I thought I'll just protect his privacy and I won't put him in the book. And also, it's a story about my mom and my dad and Ting and me. Maybe he'll be another book someday. Maybe my family with him will be another book someday.
Very good. How is your mom, by the way?
She's doing really well. Thank you for asking. Next month she turns 75. Wow. And, you know, I wondered for so long after my dad died how it was that she could be so strong. And as best I can figure out, it's when you have a man that loves you that much for that long, like my dad loved my mom, it makes you so strong that you can get through anything, even the loss of him. So I think that, you know, my mom's strength is a tribute to her and how she was raised, but also just a tribute to how much my dad loved her all those years.
Well, just one or two more things, and I'll let you go. And this is the other question I had after reading the book. You have been with DeCapo Press a long time.
Yeah.
DeCapo did not print this book.
No.
What's the deal there? I mean, you're an acquisitions editor at DeCapo. You could have just bought your own book, right?
Technically, I would still have to get it through the editorial board.
You're reaching into one pocket and you put it in the other pocket. That's the way it works, right?
I don't think I could have offered myself an advance and then haggled with myself. It would have been a little tough. You know, honestly, I adore DeCapo. I've worked here for 15 years. You know, I put my heart and soul into this company, but at the same rate, you know, I have a staff of two. And I would not want them to be in the position of having to publicize their boss's book. for them, right? I'll be like, hi, did you try this? Did you? They get enough of me just with my author's books for my own book, and I would be so neurotic about it. Oh, God, those poor women. That would be terrible. So I wouldn't do that to them. And also, it's my job to focus on other people's books, and that's what I do when I'm here, you know, at the office, except for when I'm Skyping with you in the middle of the day. But I really do focus on my authors, and I want it to stay that way when I'm here. The Good Luck Cat stuff, that's personal and mine, and I was happy to find Globe Pequot, the publisher for it, Lions Press, their imprint there. They're great people, too. And it's actually the same editor I had for my first book who edited this one. So nice continuity. He's a great guy, Keith Wallman, really good editor. So I was fortunate, lucky.
And I guess just about the last thing I had to ask you was, are you learning anything from being the author instead of shepherding the author around? Is there anything that, you know, you'll next week or next month when you're back doing, you know, full time your job? Not that you're not doing your job now. I know you're in the office, but is there anything you've picked up from being the author that will change the way you view helping the author?
I think I haven't been sensitive enough when authors have gotten bad reviews. I haven't gotten any bad reviews yet, but, you know, every time you click on that link when your publicist sends you a link to a review, you get nervous. And, you know, luckily so far, everything has been pretty positive for my book, but I can imagine now how it must feel to get a scathing review or even just a, like, quibbling review, even if it's not scathing. I had always been very flippant about just sending those links and being like, hey, you know, you got a review in the Roanoke Times. You know, and I'd read them and I'd see sometimes that they weren't great, but I had have a billion and one other things to do, and I wouldn't take the time to write just a couple sentences of, boy, that reviewer just really didn't get it, or, you know, shake it off, remember all the other good reviews you've gotten, or don't worry about it, their circulation's like two. And so now I do try to soften the blow a little bit if authors of mine get a bad review, and congratulate them more, take more time to congratulate them when they get a really good one. Yeah, I think I'm maybe better about that now. I hope I am better about that now. I wasn't bad about it in the past, but I understand a little bit more now. I really do, which is a good thing.
Well, I was going to say, then it was all worthwhile as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you better publish this, so that's good.
Having been on the receiving end of very good and very bad reviews, it's nice when the person delivering the news has a sense of, yeah, this might go well, this might not go so well.
And this too shall pass. You know, don't let it throw you.
Exactly. So what's next? You know, it takes a long time for a book to get written and then a long time to get it from completed to publication. In that time, have you given some thought to doing another book? Where's your head at?
I'd love to do another one. I mean, we'll see how this one does because, you know, they're performance-based these days. If you have a book that sells well, you'll get a contract for another book. If you don't have a book that sells well, you're going to struggle to get a contract. It's too early to tell. The history of mine is still being written, but I hope to do another book someday. It might be a sequel to my first book or actually kind of a prequel to it. I'm thinking about doing a Savvy Author's Guide to Getting Published. My first book was a Savvy Author's Guide to Book Publicity. It was kind of what you do with the book after it comes out. I want to help authors who, you know, or people who are author wannabes figure out how to get literary agents and how to get published. So that's one idea that I have. And then I'm also toying with the idea of springing off a phrase that I use in this book that seems to be resonating with people called the beautiful ordinary. Just talking about little things like, you know, sun tea brewed out on the porch or sleeping with the windows open or, you know, just those little things that make life nice and just ordinary things in everyday life that make people happy and just maybe essays that celebrate those, maybe written by me, maybe written by other people and combined into an anthology by me. I don't know. I'm toying with ideas. But right now, just focusing on this one, promoting it and having fun doing so.
Very good. Well, you did a fine job with this one, so I'm sure there'll be a market for the next one, whatever it may be. Folks, listen, you can find writer, editor, publicist, Lissa Warren's family memoir, The Good Luck Cat, How a Cat Saved a Family and a Family Saved a Cat, in great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you've watched the show before and you're watching us right now on MrMedia.com, you know how this works. Somewhere over there or over there is the cover of the book. You can click on it right now. It'll take you to Amazon where they'll give you a great price. And if you want, they can get it to you in 30 minutes or less via drone. Yes, that's true. It's not really true. You can get it via ebook or get the physical book probably within a day or two if you're willing to pay a little more for it. Lissa, one thing I wasn't sure, do you have a website set up for the book?
Well, not set up for the book per se, but my own website is lissawarren.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lissa_Warren. That's LISSA_WARREN. And I'm on Facebook as well, so come and talk to me there.
Very good. I think Ting Pei Warren needs a Twitter account, you know, kind of like Chet the Dog has with Spencer Abrams. I mean, it's not the name of the author. What am I thinking? Who's the author? Well, anyway, you know what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
Ah, I'll get you that. I'll get you that Twitter account.
I don't dare give Ting, you know, the power of the pen. You never know what she's going to say.
I think it'd be very interesting.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com. The George and Tony Entertainment Show. From the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
The Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network, and catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. This is Adam and Acid to the Extreme.
So, I'm sorry, did you ever see the film Rubber?
I've seen Flubber.
I've heard of Rubber. Isn't that about like a tire or something? Like
it is. Dude, Adam, you got to watch this movie. I'm serious.
Rubber?
It's so great. It's about a serial killer that is a tire. You know, kind of like Christine was a car. It's a tire.
And how much LSD was the director on when he...
I don't know. But it's great because what happens without giving anything away, the tire just kind of rolls into place, very sinister, and there's the person in the background. This was a highly entertaining movie. And the greatest thing, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but there's a scene where the local sheriff has got all his deputies together. He's describing this tire, and one of the deputies goes, "Is he black?"
Right here on the Realm Network.